37,025. 1. Numbers that can help take your business to the next level. 37,000. That's the number of businesses which have upgraded to NetSuite by Oracle. 25. NetSuite turns 25 this year. That's 25 years of helping businesses do more with less. 1. Because your business is one of a kind, so you get a customized solution for all of your KPIs in one efficient system. Right now, download NetSuite's popular KPI checklist designed to give you consistently excellent performance, absolutely free, at netsuite.com/vox. That's netsuite.com/vox to get your own KPI checklist. netsuite.com/vox.
Hi, I'm Kara Swisher, editor-at-large of Recode. You may know me as someone who has done more than 300 of these friggin' podcasts. This is our 300th podcast here at Recode Decode. But in my spare time, I talk tech, and you're listening to Recode Decode from the Vox Media Podcast Network. To celebrate this august event, today in the red chair, we have two returning fan favorites, my older son, Louis Swisher, and Silicon Valley editor of The Verge, Casey Newton. Both my children. No, they're not. They appeared together a bunch of times on my old podcast, Too Embarrassed to Ask, with Lauren Good. And today we're going to talk about tech trends, social media, and what the young peoples are using these days, which would be Casey. Louis and Casey, welcome to the show.
Nice to be here. And I just wanted to congratulate you, Kara, on a huge year for Recode. You know, having Mark Zuckerberg, Elon Musk, and me and Louis all in one year. What a huge year you've had.
Yeah, you know, yeah. I really...
We're kind of the top tier.
I know you are. I know. You actually are compared... Actually, Elon's pretty good. It would be funny to see you and all and Elon discussing things. We'll talk about him, too. There's a lot of things we have to talk about. And Louis made the plea to me that he doesn't want to do what the young peoples are thinking kind of thing because he does not represent all the young. Correct? Is that correct?
I mean, you just asked me about it before, and I feel like I can talk about other things, too.
Okay, because you're growing as a man. Okay, but so Casey will handle the juvenile teenage.
Yeah, yes. Casey can be our resident teen.
Exactly. All teen questions. Please direct them my way.
So we have a lot of stuff to go over. I do have to start with the big story this year, which is Facebook and the mess at Facebook. And I just love to get both of your insights on what's going on. I know, Louis, you don't use Facebook, but you use Instagram, and I don't know if you use WhatsApp or whatever, but there's a whole lot of mess around Facebook. So, Casey, thoughts? You have an amazing name your newsletter, which is fantastic.
Well, thank you. So I write a daily newsletter about social networks and democracy. It's called The Interface. You can find it at theverge.com/interface. And in the newsletter, which I send out every day of the week, we sort of go over what happened with these big social networks, particularly as it relates to what governments are doing about them as they're trying to understand them and maybe eventually regulate them. But, you know, to your point, Facebook has had a really, really tough year. And when I talk to folks there, you know, these days, there's kind of a sense of, I think, some real worrying about what is coming down the pike for them. I think they realize they've lost a lot of trust with their users and they are trying
people
to think through how they're going to wing it back. Yeah, absolutely.
Right. Do they have any sense of responsibility?
Yes, I think they do. I think they also feel unfairly targeted sometimes.
They
feel like they're scapegoats.
Yeah.
And I think one problem is that Facebook is so big and it's so consequential and it has so many effects on so many different things that when you're talking about Facebook, you have to make sure both people are talking about the same thing, right? Because Facebook might be responsible for one thing and it actually might not be responsible for something else. But really kind of nailing that down is difficult just because it's such an enormous company.
I'm interested in their victimization. It's exhausting to me. Like it was such a different response with the Google people versus the Facebook people just recently. And I call them docile. They're just docile cult members.
Well, here's something I want to talk to you about because I actually disagreed with one of your columns recently.
Did you?
And I wanted to talk about it. So
you're out.
Yeah, I know. This
you're
is
out.
My last appearance on the podcast. So the most recent Facebook scandal that your listeners have probably heard of is what I've been calling the Definers scandal, which is they hired a public relations firm to target George Soros in ways that
among
a lot
others.
Of critics have, among others, in ways that
critics,
a lot of people
critics
have said.
Of Facebook. Yeah.
Target critics in ways that some people have said were really anti-Semitic. And, you know, and this led to many, you know, angry op-eds. Something that people said in the wake of that was, you know, let's really focus on Sheryl Sandberg's role here.
Right.
And, you know, people have written, you know, many times about Mark Zuckerberg's role in this, but Sheryl Sandberg sort of runs the policy and communications shop. And so some people have said, you know, it's time for her to really get out in front of this and explain herself. And you wrote a column in which you said, or at least the way I read it was like, people need to stop focusing on Sheryl Sandberg.
I said she was much to blame, and I said it three times. I actually did it three times, which people, she can't say she's sorry enough. You know what I mean?
Okay. yeah.
My point was that Elliot Schrag, who was actually in charge and most likely hired these, it's an Elliot special to me, that right. whatever what was going on. And if you know Elliot, you know this was his doing.
Yeah.
And he came out like a loyal member that fell on his sword. I'm like, he created the situation that he should do that.
Right.
And so that was what was interesting. And then nobody's mentioned Chris Cox, who runs, what is his?
He's the head of product.
Head of product. Then nobody has mentioned Shrep, who's lovely. Nobody's mentioned the CLO, any of them. None of them get mentioned. Dan Rose, all these people who all had hands in this stuff. They just don't mention her. I get that she's sort of the high-profile person, but he gets let off like he's some geek, like I said, lost in the woods, and they get no mention, and she get the words around her, you know, are she's a Cruella de Vil. Like, that's all I'm saying. That's what I was talking about.
And you're right. And look, let's face it. Like, a lot of the criticism that Sheryl Sandberg gets is really gendered, and I think we should be really sensitive to that. And I think it's really easy for people to talk about her in a misogynist way. At the same time, she deserves responsibility. And also, I felt like the scrutiny that she's faced over this has lasted for about 5 minutes, and I just think that the chief operating officer of a big company can take it. I also think we should talk about what role Chris Cox may have played.
And Mark. Mark controls everything. Yeah. That's my only thing. The other day, Cheryl was compared to Jeff Skilling at Enron. Jeff Skilling was the CEO. Like, stop. Like, come on. Like, make it – like, Mark should be compared to Jeff Skilling, but they don't do that. Like, that's all I'm saying is that he owns – all the companies, he controls the stock, he's the CEO, he's the founder, he obviously holds huge sway over all kinds of business. For him to go, oh, I don't know, it's just that's how they do it. Like, he's some geek who's lost. Louis, I want to turn to you. Do you care at all about Facebook whatsoever?
No, and I know none of this.
Okay, all right.
this is the first I'm hearing of any of
this. Okay, all right, so you don't care. It doesn't affect you because you're not using it anyway. Have you changed your mind on any aspect of Facebook? You've never used
it. No, I still don't use it.
Why?
Well, tell us, like, what is the main way that you stay in touch with people that you care about?
I mean, I said this before, like, on Snapchat and text and stuff. Yeah. But I've kind of, like, recently just been, like, reducing my Snapchat consumption. Like, we went on a trip for Thanksgiving, and I was without internet for a week. And then I just realized over the trip, like, I don't really need any of this, like, social media stuff. You can get too caught up in it. And so I've been, like, reducing my Snapchat.
And why? Since
then. Why? Because it's kind of stupid.
Like, meaning?
Sending pictures of your face back and forth, like, sure, but, like...
Yeah, but you were doing that forever.
Like, I was doing that forever, and then, like, you know, I had an epiphany, I guess.
In Cuba.
An epiphany in Cuba.
Yeah. And but what do you mean stupid? You think you'll stop using it, or what do you
– I mean, I don't think I'm going to stop using it. Like, there's still, like, great ways. I think, like, the group chats and stuff, I like that a lot, and, like, how all the data is saved, and, like, it's not, like – I don't know. Text feels more formal in a sense, and Snapchat's more informal. Mm-hmm. So I like that aspect, but, like, just the whole, like, you know, obsession with streaks and other stuff like that. Like, I'm – not really. I thought it was, like, stupid for a while, but I was still doing it. And then now, like, you know.
So what will you use?
I had
use?
The excuse not to do it anymore. I mean, just talking to people.
In
person. Yeah, that old thing.
That old thing. We used to do that. Phone. Do you talk to people on the phone, though, a lot, right?
I FaceTime a lot, but I also like, you know, just talking to people in person instead of just, like, you know, sending pictures of your face back and forth, being like, oh, man, I Snapchat this person, but, like, nervous to talk to them in person. I think you just take. It's better to take the first step and just talk to them and establish, like, an in-person relation. And
so you're the analog generation, essentially.
I don't know what
that means. Friends, it means in person.
Oh, okay.
Not digital.
No, we're definitely not. I mean, yeah. I think we should have a push to initiate that.
What do your friends think, though? What are they doing?
I don't think they really care.
They don't care. They're just using the Snapchat.
It's up to the individual, I think.
But none of you use Facebook in your school. Nobody uses Facebook. But you all use Instagram still?
I mean, yeah, but I think Instagram is a very, like, I've heard this a lot before. It's, like, a very perfected, projected form of yourself that you want other people to think.
What did you call it to me? You had a great term.
I don't remember.
A museum.
Oh, yeah, I guess. It's a museum of, like, images of what you wish you looked like or what you want people to think you look like. And I think that's, in a way, kind of silly. Or it's very silly, actually. It's kind of stupid. And I think people just need to, like, you know, stop caring about it less because everybody has, like, the same anxieties and stuff over that. And if we all realize that, like, and that's kind of, like, what I realized, that, like, we are all, like, anxious and stuff, like, what our Snapchats look like, what our Instagrams look like. And once everybody realizes that, we'll realize the stupidity in it. And
yeah.
I think we'll probably get back to, like, what the apps were intended to be at their truest form.
Yeah. I have a hot take about social media.
Take.
Yeah.
Okay.
So in 2019, I think 2019 is the return of the group chat. If you talk to people about the kind of social interactions they actually like, it's group text, whether it's on iMessage, whether it's on your Snapchat, talking to a small group of friends. You know exactly who's there. Mm-hmm. You can share your in-jokes. You don't have to pose for people. You can just be dumb. Mm-hmm. There's none of this pressure. If you use an app like Snapchat, all of those chats can just disappear. They're not going to haunt you forever. Mm-hmm. Or maybe you just use iMessage and it's end-to-end encrypted and you feel like you're probably going to be fine. But I think increasingly, more and more people are just going to want to group chat and not worry about the rest of everything that social media has to offer.
What do you think, Mr. Swisher?
I agree with that.
Yeah. And you use that just to talk with friends, right? Just because
I mean, I honestly, I find myself talking.
Say you're on that phone a lot,
right, but not as much as Alex.
No, that's true. Our 13-year-old now has suddenly started texting. He's texting, which is interesting. Yeah. That was cool. That's cool. It's like, yay, he has friends.
He actually added me to his group chat recently.
Really?
I wasn't really a fan of being in a group chat with a bunch of 13-year-olds. I tried to leave on several occasions, but they kept adding me back.
What are 13-year-olds talking about in group chats right now?
Hey, dude.
I don't know. Most of the words are, like, not words.
They're like a lot of emojis, right?
Oh, no. It's just like, I don't even know.
It's a bunch of slang terms.
Slang terms that I don't even get. I'm starting to feel like the older generation now. Like, I don't understand what these terms mean.
Was there emojis or not?
I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Not that many.
They keep putting you back on the group chat?
Yeah, and I keep trying to leave. And I actually,
It's what you get when you have a
13-year-old brother.
Yeah, I know, but you need to get in there and be cool older brother and then leave.
I am the cool older brother.
I know, yeah. But say some hey dudes, like something like that.
I think me trying to leave the chat. I don't know.
Like, I think you should stay in the chat but only say like, hey kids, don't do drugs, you know, just a lot of positive messaging.
Exactly.
Hey, do your homework, you know, that kind of thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Just like, did you finish your lab report?
Yeah, there you go. 13-year-olds love
then they'll
that.
They'll kick you out.
No, they'll respect you for your authority.
No, they will not. We're not letting you near that.
No dessert unless you've done your homework.
So get back to this group chat thing. So you think that this is how people, and also with video or what? With video?
Yeah, I mean, so I do think that there is going to be an opportunity like for an Instagram to create some of these features that
Wait, does Instagram have group chats?
I hope they don't.
So they do have group chats, and I think you're going to see them lean into that and do more kinds of things for smaller groups of people for your close friends. Like I think that's going to be a big theme for them next year. Snapchat is already doing this, and I think it's been really successful for them.
But why does Instagram need to do that?
Because they can copy and steal everything.
Well, exactly.
Snapchat
that's
does.
Kind of like their whole platform. And everybody recognizes that. So I think Instagram should stop trying to copy all these other companies because people can see that they're copying it and they don't want to use like those messaging platforms.
There's a strategic answer for that too, though, which is that on Facebook, it grew so big that eventually Facebook wasn't your friends. It was your parents. It was people you saw once at a wedding. It was your ex. It was your boss. Mm-hmm. And so people stopped posting because you don't want to perform for your entire phone book. And as Instagram gets more popular, it's inheriting that exact problem from Facebook. Mm-hmm. So Instagram has to figure out a way to make it feel intimate again. And I think you're going to see it in stories.
You're going to see it that people will do group chats.
Exactly.
Just between and among each other.
Exactly.
But why can't people just use Snapchat and text for those platforms? Or
Facebook stop its rapacious march into everybody else's business by stealing ideas? Casey?
Facebook
is paranoid, and they're smart to be paranoid because they know that every social app is a fad and this will be true forever. And so in order to survive, they have to keep transforming time after time into what works right now, because what works right now might not work in 6 months. Mm-hmm. And so if that means copying, they're going to copy because the alternative is death.
Right. But Louis, the copying is offensive to you.
Or the alternative could be just staying genuine.
And make something up themselves.
Doing what people want, like keeping Instagram as what people think Instagram of. Like doing what they came to Instagram to do. Instead of like, I don't go to Instagram to like, actually I found myself, because when I was in Cuba, the Cuban government is blocked Snapchat. So when I finally got Wi-Fi, I was able to talk to some of my friends, but not over Snapchat because it's blocked. And so I ended up actually having to use Instagram as a Snapchat in a way and, you know, doing all this stuff like texting and sending pictures and stuff. And one of the texts my friend sent me is, it's so depressing that you have to use Instagram for this way. So I don't think people are going to want to use Instagram that way if that's what, you know, just two casual teens are talking about. I think Instagram should just stick to what it is, a photo sharing platform.
You know the founders left. And you met Kevin. I found a picture of you when you were 9 or 10 years old meeting him. You were very thrilled to meet him at the time. And although you were happier, I have another picture of you meeting Evan Williams, and you were.
I was a bit happier to meet him.
You were very happy to meet. You were like,
I think I was too young. I didn't really realize who Kevin was.
Yes, but in any case, you've talked to him a couple times. He left because he was not happy at Facebook and the direction Facebook was taking. And were you aware of this at all or not?
I think you mentioned it to me.
Yeah, I wrote a column in the New York Times. You might read sometime.
Maybe.
Kind of a cool thing. It's like the New York Times hired me to write a column. It would be nice if my son would read maybe one of the articles.
Maybe. Maybe.
Maybe. Okay. In any case, Casey, what do you think?
Maybe for your birthday. It's okay, coming up, isn't it?
Okay. Casey, what do you think of that? What that will happen? Because they, you know, Kevin was copying, and he actually talked about it. He's like, they have great ideas. We take them.
Yeah. I've sort of become more sympathetic to that idea, actually.
Yeah, you seem to be. You're like an apologist for their stealing.
Well, sure. I think it would also be great if they tried their own ideas. But what I will say is after they copied Stories, which was very shameless, they did start to build their own feature set around it. And the way that they've always talked about it is we think this is a format. And, you know, we don't think that any one company should have an exclusive license to it.
No.
So we're going to try to build our own set of features around it. And in a lot of ways, I think they improved on what Snapchat did.
So they improved on
it's
a format.
Just business,
but why can't they come
you
know? Up their own format for the first, like, someone else can copy?
You're totally right. Like, they should. It's just, in any business, it's very rare for a business to have a chain of innovations. Like, for the most part, they have one or two good ideas
Kevin's
for
gone?
The entire lifetime
is
of the company.
Is it going to hurt that Kevin's gone?
I actually do think it's really going to hurt them. I think that
and Mike,
Instagram.
Not just Kevin and Mike Krieger.
Yeah. I think, I wrote a piece called The End of Instagram as We Know It when they quit, and my point was, as of that day, Instagram became just another team at Facebook. Like, we should not think of Instagram as this totally separate thing. It is just a different front end for the Facebook advertising
network. Right, and
they're
moving. Right, exactly. And that was the problem Kevin had, that was happening. He couldn't hold it back.
Yeah, although I will just put it out there, we still don't know what the final straw was for Kevin Systrom, and this is my white whale, and I'm desperate to know.
The war meeting.
The war meeting?
The one where he was like, this is war, we're at a war, Mark. When he was, I wrote about it when I wrote that column, when he had that meeting where he said, Mark said, this is war. Like, he was like in The Godfather or something.
Okay.
And Kevin was like, what the hell? And he sidelined him there.
Interesting.
And he got super sidelined there.
Yeah.
Mm. And, you know, he's very tasteful. And I think he thought he has distaste for that. I would guess he would have distaste for the fat, bloated Facebook platform.
Yeah, he's a really, really sharp guy.
Yeah.
And he's was also very competitive. And I think he continued to see Instagram very much as his thing.
Yeah.
And then it kind of did get taken away.
And they got dragged into the Russia thing. He didn't like that. And he thought that was distasteful. We met at one point and he couldn't hide it. Like, he knew what he wanted to do, and they weren't going to let him do it because they owned it. I think that was it. You know, so I followed the Wall Street Journal when I was there.
Oh, interesting. And then you started your own thing, and it worked out
great.
Yeah, we
did. It was sort of like, ugh. I couldn't do this. People would be like, how's the journal? I'd be like, ugh. Like, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, that's what it was. Anyway, Rupert Murdoch's an awful person.
Shade at your ex.
Shade. What did you do?
I just said you're throwing shade at your ex.
That's not my ex. He just inserted himself, like, by buying the Wall Street Journal. Anyway, I had no control over that. I want to finish this up on the idea of creating another social platform. People have talked about that. Louis, would you want another? What if you had to grow a social network or a place where you could communicate with your friends that was from a green field? A lot of people are talking about why isn't there a social network that you pay for or a separate one with everyone being mad or upset with Facebook or bored with Facebook or any of the others. Why not create one? Would you want something like that? What would it be like?
I mean, I don't really think I'm the type of person to be asking that. I'm not really an entrepreneur in that aspect. I think we just have to wait for, like, the next, like, you know, tech genius in their, like,
well, yeah, but what would you want? What would you like?
I don't know. I don't know. I think it's up to, like, a lot of factors, like what the public opinion is, like what people feel there's a need and, like, or in social media, what there's lacking. And I don't know. I think just time will tell. That answer.
What about you, Casey?
Well, so here's something I'm looking forward to. So you may remember the social network Vine, which was started by Dom Hoffman and some others.
Yeah, you used to watch them.
Yeah, but then it got bought out.
Well, like, what do you mean?
Like, I don't know, all the Viners who were once like original artists, or not artists, like original. Like, they call themselves creators now.
Mm-hmm.
And so like what they did was like they had these like funny platforms and then they got too serious about it. And they
You like the guy who'd slam his face in the door all the time. Who was that?
I have no clue who you're talking about.
You did, you showed
all right,
it to me.
Let's put a pin in that. Okay. So
you can take it away, Casey.
So it sold to Twitter and then Twitter had no idea what to do with it and shut it down. Well, what we have found in the years since is people really, really miss Vine. And you go to YouTube and they're just compilations of old Vines and they have like 80 million views, right? And so Dom Hoffman has the idea of bringing back Vine and, you know, with some tweaks. And so next year he's planning to relaunch a version of Vine. He's calling it Byte. And I'm very excited to see what the next version of Vine looks like.
It's
going to be an app, yeah.
This is the founder.
Yeah.
So will you watch these compilations?
No. No, I don't think I will. I don't know.
No, but you watch
the compilations.
I watch the compilations. Oh, I don't know if I'm going to ever download Byte, is what I'm saying. I don't know how well Byte would
do,
especially with like apps like Musical.ly and stuff that have just become a joke in themselves.
Oh, yeah, we should talk about Musical.ly.
They're not Musical.ly. What is it called? TikTok.
All right, we'll talk about that in a minute when we get back. But why you watch the compilations of Vines, though?
Right, because I think it's kind of like Disney taking their old classic movies and then revamping them to make some money.
Right.
Like, sure, they're going to be good. Like, I'm actually looking forward to The Lion King. It's going to be beautiful. Mm-hmm. But you can see, like, it's not going to be what it originally was. It's never going to have that charm that it originally had.
I see. You did like it. You watched a lot of it.
Yeah, like, Vine was really good at first, but then it got too old. Like, you know, it just progressed into something that it wasn't originally.
So that's
and I guess
all
that's what made a lot of people, like, draw away from it.
Yeah. Well, That's an interesting. So, Byte, when is it coming out?
I believe like we're supposed to see a beta in the spring.
In the spring,
yeah.
And he's doing it by himself, raising money from
others. He has some money, and I don't actually remember.
And Twitter
if he's raised
has put that
money.
By the wayside, just gone.
No, and like by the way, why didn't Twitter just build a 6-second looping camera into their own app? Like they didn't need to kill Vine.
We
that's
can
another
go into
story.
That. We're not gonna because Louis doesn't.
I'm
kind of
glad they did.
Why
kill Vine?
Oh really? Okay,
yeah.
You like it because it lost the charm for
it
you.
Lost
the nostalgia,
charm.
Nostalgia
yeah.
of 1 year.
It was like I don't know, like. I don't know. It's like it was just kind of like becoming like, you know, try not to think of a bad analogy. Like all I can think of is kind of like an old sick horse and, you know, you got to put it out of its misery. But I don't want PETA coming after me.
Okay. All right, PETA, stay away from my son. You have to come through me first. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break now. We'll be back in a minute with my son, Louie. Swisher, horse hater, and Casey
Newton. No, I'm just thinking like Seabiscuit. It just got too old.
Okay,
you know?
All right. And Casey Newton from The Verge.
Everywhere you look, people seem to be worried that kids are suffering an unprecedented mental health crisis and that smartphones and social media are to blame. But how accurate is this belief?
It is a compelling narrative because it allows you to think as a parent, like, oh, it's not me or choices I'm making. It's this thing that has reached out and affected my child.
I'm Taylor Lorenz, and this week on Power User, we're talking about the moral panic around kids and technology and what we can all do to actually help children. It's not what you think.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prof G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Kara Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from Blue Flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant, super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. And not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds 4 times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
Okay, we're back with my son, Louis Swisher, and Casey Newton from The Verge. We were talking about a lot of things. We were just talking about Facebook, very interesting stuff around that Louis wants to kill Vine, and Casey was talking about Byte. But one of the things that you mentioned, Louis, was TikTok. And you don't like these Musical.ly, these TikToks and stuff.
I don't care for them. I don't know. I've never downloaded the app. I've never seen one that's not in, like, you know, a meme. So
right.
I think you might have to bring Alex in on this one.
Okay.
He'd be more of an expert.
Right.
I mean, as the official teen at the table, I'm happy to tell you about
okay,
TikTok.
Tell us.
So TikTok is an app by a company called ByteDance, which is a Chinese company.
Yeah.
And they let you film short videos, there's a lot of lip syncing that takes place. And
mm-hmm.
so people who get like bored at work or at school will just make these very funny lip sync videos. And the app has become very popular.
Mm-hmm.
It was very popular
in China, right?
Very popular in China. And then there was a similar app in the United States called Musical.ly. ByteDance bought Musical.ly, integrated it into TikTok, and now it's just called TikTok. And it is probably like the fastest growing social network in America, although it's not like enormous at this point. But the thing that just trips me up is it's like, if an app is made by a Chinese company, like the Chinese government is going to have access to basically
right.
all of that data.
Right.
Right. And like, sure, if you're just making a lip sync video, that's okay. But you think about if this network grows, like that's going to be a lot
in
of
your phone.
It's gonna, in your phone. I'm not trying to like
I'm
make everyone paranoid,
yeah,
but it's a consideration, right?
Right.
If you're going to use a social network and think about where that data is going to be stored and how it might be used.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Louis, do you use TikTok at all?
No. No, I never will.
You don't do lip syncing videos when I'm not watching you? No.
No, I don't.
The other big criticism that the TikTok gets is it really does court a teenage audience, like a young teenage audience.
Like a 13-year-old audience.
And so there have been a lot of creeps, like looking at like 13-year-old girls doing lip sync videos. And there were a lot of criticisms about Musical.ly that it didn't do a very good job kind of policing that behavior.
Yeah. Also, I think like all the promotional ads I've seen for TikTok are like including like young girls that are like, it's just doing it in an inappropriate way. It's disgusting.
Really?
They're just like promoting like these like, yeah, but like these young girls, and they're using them in like their videos. And it, I don't think that's okay. I don't know if the user consented to that or if anything about that. But it doesn't. I don't think it gives it a good look.
Right. I love my feminist son. This is fantastic. But because it's selling. They're trying. That's why they're doing.
Well,
it.
I think they're just trying to appeal to a younger audience. But then you know.
No, it's appealing to men. It's appealing to men.
Well, yeah. I mean, like, yeah. I guess.
You know,
yeah.
We should also say, like, I stand behind all my criticisms. The app can also be a lot of fun. It is like a really silly fun. And Facebook took it seriously enough that they cloned it and they made an app called Lasso and they put it out, and so that is now out there.
So, what do you think of Lasso?
You know, I don't think it's great. The guy who ran it quit about a week after it launched, which is never a good sign.
No.
I call these apps murder clones. It's when like Facebook looks at your app and likes it and so makes one expressly to kill it.
And doesn't always work. They did it
they've tried it 100 times and it worked with Stories and you know, maybe a handful of other things, but it doesn't always work. I don't know. Lasso has not gotten a ton of traction in its
never
first
even
month.
Heard of Lasso.
I have never heard of Lasso.
I've never heard of Lasso.
Well, you got to stay in touch with the teens, y'all.
Is that with the Facebook dating
The teens
service?
Are not in touch no. with Lasso.
The teens are not in touch with Lasso. Yeah. Awesome. Hasn't roped them in yet.
Oh.
Oh, good one.
Thank you.
Good one.
Oh, there's horses are coming riding through this podcast. So one of the things you mentioned, Louis, is memes. That is one thing that
I think TikTok is being used very ironically. Like if you search TikTok videos on like YouTube and stuff, like you're not going to get like, you know, genuine like best lip sync videos. You're just going to get like people making fun of those people. And like it gets to a point where it is cyberbullying.
Right.
And like there's a point where it also points out the absurdity in like some of these people on TikTok.
But you look at a lot of memes online, right? Is that correct? Or is that just your brother?
I think that's more Alex.
Like, yeah, he loves memes.
I used to be like, I mean.
So what's happened with those? Where's the memes going?
I don't know. It's really not, I think. It's an odd thing. It's like a very economic thing too. And I think honestly, like us talking about it kind of degrades it. So I don't think we should talk about
what
it.
What does that mean in economic? What is that supposed to mean?
Two adults and a teenager sitting in a podcast talking about memes degrades memes. So I don't know. I think for the integrity of them, we shouldn't speak of them.
I'm just curious, like, where do you see them? Are they sent mostly via text messages?
I see a lot of mine on Instagram, and a lot of them on Instagram are stolen from like places like 4chan and Reddit.
Okay. Do you use those?
No. Well, I downloaded Reddit for a little bit, and I thought it was funny, and like I saw some like funny stuff, but it wasn't really my cup of tea.
Why?
I don't know. Just didn't click.
Really? You're not a neo-Nazi. That's good. Okay.
I don't think all people on Reddit are neo-Nazi.
No, I know
there's some like really good stuff on Reddit. Yeah. Reddit does really interesting things.
Elon Musk joined supposedly joined like a subreddit about memes recently, and that was like quite the discussion.
Why?
I don't know why, but I went on it and they said that like, oh, Elon Musk is in here. Let's post Elon Musk memes until he comments back.
comments back, what does that mean?
Like he replies.
Responds to the
meme. He comments back. Oh, okay.
See, this is why we can't talk about
memes. Comment. I think you said comets. I was like, no. Is that like the pizza place?
Yeah, comet is another thing. Yeah,
it's gonna make a comeback bigger than ever.
but Reddit, go ahead. You were saying Reddit is.
Well, I think it's really interesting. You know, one of the things Reddit does that I like
is still owned by Condé Nast. Is that right? Or are they?
No, it's a solo operation now.
Right.
It's a venture backed company.
Yeah. Okay.
And something they do is they have like kind of a floor of rules. So it's like, you know, you can't post like certain kinds of hate speech, but then any other subreddit can kind of raise that floor and they can make their own restrictions based on their own community. So, you know, maybe if you have a knitting community, you can say, you know what, we're not going to talk about politics in here or something. Mm-hmm. And so you create these communities and everybody has their own rules and they can all get along better than if you're on a platform with 2.2 billion other people, all of whom have very different expectations for what kinds of discussions should be allowed.
And they've also put the bad ones down. They've moved them. They haven't removed all of them.
Not all of them, but many of them.
Mm-hmm. They moved the worst ones, and then they've moved the bad ones down or out of hard to find and things like that.
I'll tell you the thing that made me most interested in Reddit recently is that my sister-in-law, who is a young mother, recently abandoned Facebook and Instagram, and her social networks are now an iCloud photo stream where she shares photos of my nephews, and she's on Reddit. And she has a couple forums that she likes to go and read. She never posts, but she reads those every day.
Services.
Yeah.
Like the old chat?
Well, yeah. Forums. So she chats and then she just kind of browses forums basically. But like for her, that is enough social networking. And I thought, well, gosh, if Reddit can get my sister-in-law, there may be a lot more here than I've been giving it credit for.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Interesting. But what about Gab? Like these are these others. Gab, though, you may not know, this is where one of the people, the man who shot up the synagogue in Pittsburgh. And killed and murdered all those people. He was thrown off of Reddit, or he got to this site called Gab, which sounds like a teen girl site, and it's essentially a free speech site, which essentially means it's a bunch of neo-Nazis talking to each other, essentially.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's a Twitter clone that allows hate speech, basically, is the shortest way to describe it. And
There's a lot of those. It's pretty gross.
Yeah, but it has a very fraught existence. It lost after in the wake of that shooting, it lost its web hosting, it lost its payment provider. It was a platform that got deplatformed. It currently has those things. But
in the same vein, there's going to be a lot different platforms are going to start for the right-wing people, for the left-wing people. Do you see that?
I do think that we are going to see some fragmentation. And I'm honestly not sure it's a bad thing that we see more fragmented social networks. Like social networks that are smaller are much easier to control. And we need more
this
control.
This is too big. Yeah. All right, Louis, when we're talking about the idea of people saying whatever they want, you talked about this last night, the starts with Trump at the top on Twitter and things like that. You don't pay attention to any of that, right? Do you pay attention to
I pay attention to politics. I actually find them very interesting.
All right, what do you think of his use of Twitter? And then you say, but anyone can now say anything.
Well, I think like with a lot of people, I think as times are going on and like people like Trump and people who speak like Trump are saying these like ridiculous things, and they're having the ability to say them. I think we as a public become desensitized to these things. Like, I was actually watching. I think maybe it probably was a Vox video. I think recently.
You love who?
I like Strikethrough, and I like Ezra's shows or whenever he does a video. I'm a huge fan of Vox. I also like the New York Times Retro Report. I think that's very cool.
Yeah, that's cool.
I think they did a video about how this type of language and how it circulates around the nation. Like desensitizes people, and things we would once consider absurd for politicians to say are now just normal, and things we consider.
So how does it impact you? Do you just ignore it?
I think honestly, like now, like people are like, "Oh, Trump did this," and I'm like, "Oh, whatever." Like I think maybe 30, like if somebody said that to you when you were growing up, like, "Oh, Nixon did this," like I mean, when he did the things he did, like if he said the things Trump was saying, that would be ridiculous.
I know
those times.
It's crazy, yeah.
And so now, like Trump like promoting hate speech and like promoting all these other things that he does that are like, not good, I guess, in the simplest terms, I guess, it desensitizes us as a nation and makes us, like, gradually become okay with the things he says or just, be like, oh, nothing's going to change him, so.
Yeah. He retweeted me yesterday?
Yeah, I saw that.
Trump retweeted you?
No, he didn't retweet her. It was, like, an image. It was, like, a video of Hillary Clinton saying all black people are alike.
But she wasn't.
It was not a good joke.
No, but it was not. She was meaning to.
She was joking on the joke that all black, like,
Yeah, exactly.
Bad
joke.
It was not a good joke, I don't think. Well, she thought it was funny. Like the whole audience laughed.
I didn't think it was funny.
And the whole audience.
Yes, because she was making fun of the joke of the bad thing. It was.
But still,
Let me just get through this clearly. I was talking about the idea of Michelle Obama saying when they go low, we go high. Mm-hmm. But then, and I said Cory Booker said when they go low, we kick them in the shins. Like, and I said, is that a change? And what do you think of this? And she said, actually, that was Eric Holder. And I just thought it was Cory Booker. He's been super aggressive that way too. Mm-hmm. And I said, oh, I'm sorry. I mix them up. And she goes, well, they all look alike. Like, as you know,
that's
what I mean?
Not, that, I don't
but
think
she was,
okay.
She was kidding about the joke of the joke. You know what I mean? It was like, was being there. It was like, that's not what she wasn't meaning that in any way. Yeah. And so I was like, oh.
Regardless if she meant that, she shouldn't have said it.
I know, because she's Hillary Clinton and whatever.
She always says the wrong thing. She always finds the right way to say the wrong thing. That's what I think.
No, but she's Hillary Clinton. You hear it. Like, she could say hello, and you'd be like, what? in the world did that mean? Like, I'm just telling you.
Oh, no, I don't think that. I think Hillary, I think you as a Hillary supporter sometimes get caught up in it. And
no,
you
I do
miss
not.
Out. You don't pay attention to the somewhat absurd things she says sometimes.
No, as with Sheryl Sandberg, she gets
I know. I'm not saying that she doesn't. You're changing the topic. She definitely does have it. Like, she definitely does receive a lot of, like, sexist input because she is a woman. And that.
Well, she's also Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, she's also Hillary Clinton. But you also have to remember, she's also Hillary Clinton. She always says the wrong thing at the right time.
Okay, all right. Okay, good. I'm gonna
we can get into a poll. We can have our own politics podcast.
Okay, we can see that. But here's the deal. He retweeted it. There was several different
videos. So, like, he tweeted a clip of it.
There were a couple things, like, she's a racist with the video in it. And whatever the people are saying.
They left out a lot of context.
They left out a lot of context.
Right.
And so he retweeted it twice. Ugh. And so, luckily, he didn't put my Twitter handle. I would have been, like, dealing with the base all day long. But it was interesting because I thought, oh, no, I'm going to get inundated today and just trolled out my yin yang. And someone was like, how do you feel about it? I'm like, I don't care. Whatever. Yeah. What did he say today? Well, who did he insult today? Because he was also insulting people in Mexico, the caravans. He insulted Mueller's everything. He was insulting everybody. And Louis, you're right. I didn't pay attention to the 20 insults he did. It was like Twitter vomit. Mm-hmm. Like having someone.
You just kind of like, you just get so caught up in it, you forget about all the stuff he's saying. And if you break down everything, you can point out the individual absurdity. I guess,
Casey?
But we don't do that.
Yeah, we're in a real tricky spot with this guy, huh? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which, you know, I was thinking of doing a column, like, what would happen if he couldn't be on Twitter? If Twitter just cut him off someday? Where would he go?
I mean, people say that, and here's what would happen. He would post somewhere else, and someone would write a bot that would screenshot it, and that would immediately get posted to Twitter. And
but
so,
it's not the same impact.
I think it's like 95% of the impact.
I'm writing a column about this.
Okay, go for it.
Just think about it, because someone would bot him and put it somewhere else.
It would just like – somebody would automate the process of taking whatever he was saying everywhere and put that right on Twitter and, you know – like he could use Facebook, and then if he got kicked off Facebook,
you know, work Facebook. It wouldn't.
He'd use Tumblr. I mean, like there's plenty of places to post on the internet.
But I don't think people rush. I think it's a very interesting question if they did that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. The guy's
the
president.
He was on vacation for Thanksgiving. I was like, oh, phew. Like he didn't say it. Then he did. Then he went crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it's really striking how much he uses Twitter.
Yeah, it is. Like, there were 20 of them the other day. It was really interesting. So you don't think that – talking about Lou's idea, like, you're anesthetized to this, are you?
I mean, so I don't follow the president. I don't
not
follow
just him.
Him.
He's just the best troll there is, kind of thing.
Yeah. What should Twitter do about what?
Yeah, anything? Or they give me an update on
Twitter, you know – Twitter has realized recently that the tweets that perform the best are the ones that tend to make us panicked and outraged. And so they're thinking about that. And I think they should because, you know, the more you look at Twitter, probably the more panicked or outraged you will become. Mm-hmm. And it's not a healthy way to live. Mm-hmm. And so I think Twitter needs to figure out ways to make people feel better about themselves when they look at tweets. You know, in addition to all of the kind of scary world news, there's also a lot of really funny stuff on Twitter. There's also just a lot of like people being people and sports highlights.
Yes, I like
stuff.
It for that. Like, I like the memes, Louis.
There's
like
some good memes.
Do you not use Twitter at all still?
No.
You should. You'd like it. No. He just like threw off Jack Dorsey's whole life. No.
Yeah.
Why would
Although there are high schools where Twitter's really popular.
I know. It's actually really good for news, Louis. You would like it. Now, let me ask you a question. One of the things we were just discussing also was this idea of privacy. Like, Twitter's all out there. You're all out there with Twitter. Your thoughts on the privacy issue. Like, are you worried about that? I mean, Casey talked about the things in China. You know, you want these separate kind of things by yourself. And you said several times ephemeral.
Yeah, I think kind of like how we've all become desensitized to hate speech and other forms of talk that would be considered inappropriate. We've, like, at least for me and the people around me, we've become desensitized to our privacy. And, like, I think, you know, having two techie parents, it's like you guys are very concerned about your privacy and a lot of stuff like that. But growing up in a social media age where, you know, you're supposed to share, like, as much as you can or as much as you want to with your, you know, public social self on, like on the phone and stuff like that, I frankly don't really care about, like, I've grown to not really care about, like, you know, I don't put stuff, I will just not put private stuff on there or put like stuff that I don't really want to share on there. But I think we've all just become a little less like caring about our privacy.
Where do you think about it at all?
What do you mean?
Do you think about it? Like where your location is? Do you care about?
No, she's like things like Snap Maps and stuff gradually make us like care less about our location because we just want to share it with our friends. But we're actually just sharing it with Snapchat and all the people that they sell their data to.
Right.
So,
yeah.
I think a lot of stuff like, and also like just the, you know, backroom deals of like data usage and stuff that the public doesn't really know about. Like maybe we've heard of
it.
Are
you outraged by this?
I mean, you know, you could think about it. Yeah, when you break it down,
you're the product,
Louis.
But
at the base level, I think people care a lot less about their privacy.
Would you like to be paid for your location and your information? And do you think you should?
That'd be nice.
Yeah. Okay.
maybe I wouldn't have to get a summer job.
Okay. Or just wander around and be social. You know, it's interesting about your location. That's how I found you at a party. You said you weren't at. That was great. Your brother.
No, that's not true. I just wasn't picking up my phone.
No, I saw you on SnapNaps. That's how you did.
SnapNaps.
What a SnapMaps.
That just emphasizes your out of touchness.
I had your brother do it, and we did. Is you were shadowing, ghosting yourself? What is it called?
Never mind. No.
You were ghosting
yourself. You don't need to dive into this.
I'm just telling you, we found your friends, and then we knew where you were.
Except I wasn't hiding from you.
I know, but I didn't
know where
you were.
I just wasn't picking up my phone because I wasn't on it.
I understand, but I was able to locate you, and I felt very good about that.
I felt very proud in that moment.
I was. I found
it. It's like a Gen Z detective story.
You're Gen Z. That's right. So what do you think about privacy right now?
I don't necessarily think of it in terms of privacy, but the writer Ben Thompson has this idea of data refineries, and Google and Facebook, he says, are data refineries. And the basic idea is—
like they're oil companies.
Exactly. And it's like you give them your data, and then they turn it into this very valuable thing, and then they monetize it in various ways. And the point that a lot of people are making is like, we don't really have a good sense of how much our data is worth, right? Like we don't know how much it's worth after it goes through that refinery.
Right.
So— We're recording this in Washington, D.C. I was on Capitol Hill this week, and I was talking to—
You were wearing a tie.
I was wearing a tie. Everyone was telling me how great I look. Thank you. See, again, just everyone's weighing in on this. But anyway, what congressional staffers were telling me was they want to get a better sense of how much that data is worth. And and maybe if we had a better sense of how much, not just how much these companies were making off us in the sense of like average revenue per user, but like— to the extent of what are we giving away, and what is like, the lifetime value of that?
$75 or whatever.
Right.
I mean, don't make a face.
I'm worth $1.50.
You
know.
What? No, you're worth 70. Like years ago, Steve Case did this. He was saying we're making $150 off of every user. This was 100 years ago. Like, this is how much they monetize. So, and I put up my hand. I'm like, where's my $75?
Right.
And he's like, sit down, Kara. And I was like, but really, where is it? Why don't I get part of it? Like, there should be, if people could like trade, well, that's like sort of like selling your liver, I guess, right? Like,
well, you know, so there was a social network called Steam, and they released, it was a social network, and they released crypto tokens. And the idea was that everyone who participated would sort of earn crypto money for participating. And if you had a really popular post, you get paid much more money, and you know it was a worthwhile experiment. They announced this week that they're pretty much shutting down, and
well,
it really didn't
it
work
does.
Out.
It can get ugly. It's
like, yeah,
it
and
can get,
you know,
the things
it's not
you
a great
do.
Business.
Right. All right. When we get back, we're going to talk about gadgets and things like that. We're here with Louis Swisher, my son, and Casey Newton, not my son, from The Verge.
You wish he was.
Oh, sorry. I do in a lot of ways. Okay, we're here with Louis Swisher, the final section of our lovely 300th podcast of Kara Swisher's Recode Decode. Thank you very much. I agree. I deserve the kudos and much. Stop that. Stop it. Now you're making fun of me. You two are like really bad.
A nice little golf clap for you.
What's a golf clap?
You're just a really light.
I'd like a cheer. Like,
huzzah!
No, don't huzzah.
All right.
Don't huzzah. Anyway, I am fantastic. Everybody knows that. Louis, you're fully aware you have the most fantastic mother ever. I just want to underscore that to you.
That's how she wakes me up in the morning. I'm fantastic.
I do. I did that to your brother this morning. I go, you're welcome, Mom. You're the best mom. And he's like, he rolled his eyes in a rather dramatic fashion at me. All right. I want to talk about gadgets. So you and games and things like that. You know, Louis, what gadgets are you? You have your like weird little speakers, right? What do you
mean? I mean, honestly, like the only gadgets I'm using are my phone, my headphones, and my speakers. And like, you know, like Xbox, but like I used to on it like I feel like five or seven years ago there was like a kind of a gadget revolution, and all these tech gadgets were coming out, and then once they all came out, people realized which ones they liked, which ones were useful, and they settled with like what they like to use. And I feel like nowadays I have way less gadgets than I did then, because also you're going to all these promotional things and you come on with all these free gadgets, and I try them out and show them off to my friends. But I think now, honestly, like my tech not consumption, but like all my tech products are pretty simple in like a small amount. I think.
Right. So just, you have the phone.
Just computer,
period.
Phone.
Phone like, is yeah, period.
Phone, of course. Right. Computer, like for work and for school work and stuff. Headphones and speaker and earbuds, and that's about it for my tech.
What headphones are you using? And are they wireless?
Yes, I'm using the Beats Solo Wireless.
All right.
Please sponsor me.
I'll call them.
They're a really good set of headphones.
Why do you like them? You know, because they're not too much.
They're comfy.
They're comfy. Yeah. So you use those completely. That's all you use. Nothing else.
I just pretty much use those in my earbuds.
All right. If you had to give up your phone, your computer, or your game player, which one would you give up?
I feel like probably like, you know,
stack rank them.
I feel like the like phone is definitely top tier. Then computer. Actually, maybe. I think the computer is a lot more versatile, and I could like if I lost my phone or like, you know, I didn't have a phone, I feel like I could find a lot of ways to use my computer to replace it. Mm-hmm. Like you can text. I can text because it's an Apple computer.
Phone is the critical element.
I think phone probably is pretty critical. But I do like my computer a lot. I think I'd give up the Xbox, but I really do like the Xbox.
All right, we're going to talk that in a minute. Casey, your thoughts on your gadgets?
I'm
cool?
Also pretty simple.
And by the way, Louis has speakers. You have those. What speakers do you have? The one with the cross? Ultra?
No, it's Ultimate Ears. Right. Ultimate Ears Boom 2.
You have several of them.
I have one of them. Alex has one of them.
Oh, you're right. Okay, you steal it from him.
It's a portable Bluetooth speaker thing.
Yeah.
I'm also not a huge gadget head. I have the iPhone 10. This is the first year in 5 years that I didn't just go buy the new iPhone.
I didn't either.
It seemed like there's just no real benefit to upgrading.
I need a new phone. I had the same phone for 2 years.
No, I know.
It's starting to break down.
We're getting it on Monday, but go ahead.
My most recent gadget purchase that I do love is the new iPad Pro. Mm-hmm. I've been waiting for the iPad that had Face ID. I use it mostly as just like a kind of like TV, but I'll also like check my email and read tweets. Mm-hmm. That thing is fantastic.
I have one. I haven't used it at all.
Oh, really?
I have to sit with it.
I have not even looked at an iPad.
I talk to so many people. They're like, I never use my iPad for anything, and I don't get it because it's like the best thing for like watching Netflix. Take it on a plane.
Why not on your computer?
I can't download episodes of anything to watch on my computer. So if I'm taking a long plane flight,
on iTunes.
Yeah, you're right. I could pay for it, but it's like, you know, if I want to watch a season of Netflix shows? Like, I take a long flight, you know, like on my way here, I was like planning on getting all this work done, and then United Wi-Fi just didn't work for the entire cross-country flight. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I had a bunch of episodes of a TV show downloaded on Netflix,
and I just watched it on my iPad.
It's called Schitt's Creek, I'm not sure if we're allowed to say that.
That's all right.
It's created by Eugene Levy. It also stars Catherine O'Hara. One of the funniest TV shows I've ever seen, and they're coming to San Francisco in January. And I have a ticket to see them. Is it what?
Is it as in Up Schitt's Creek?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Okay. It's, oh my gosh, it's so funny.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. So you use that. And then you use your phone, obviously.
Yeah. Use my phone. And like
I find myself not using my computer all day now. I do so much stuff on the phone.
Really?
100%. Just writing. That's it.
Yeah. I don't know. I put together my newsletter on the computer. The computer is still super useful to me.
Writing. But
you
I
know, the other thing kind of like your job is like text, tweet, write. That's kind of your job. So you could do most of that from your phone.
And chatting here. And
talking.
I have a television show, which you also don't watch, but that's okay. You didn't.
I've like been like wondering why we still pay for cable.
Anyway, why do we
pay for cable?
Well, I don't know.
Do you watch cable?
No. But I didn't buy all the package this time in Washington.
That is true.
I didn't buy it. I just have the regular one because it's just...
You just watch the news, but that's about
it. Like, I watch cable news.
And I stopped watching news a while ago.
Yeah, you don't watch anything on TV. What do you watch on that TV of yours?
Why did I
buy you one?
Because I like to play video games.
Video games. All right, we're going to get to
that. More of a monitor than a TV.
It's a monitor. That's exactly it. You know, years ago, Jason Kilar, who started Hulu, at a thing. I had a little event at Sundance, and I invited... This was when they just started. I invited him, Reed Hastings, who had just started Netflix, and the third person was Chad Hurley, who had just started YouTube. And we were in a basement, and it was full. But I was like, these guys are going to change everything. There was all the Hollywood people like, no, they're not. Like, it was like they were so uninterested in them. I'm like, I have assembled. This is the future. And they were like, no.
I remember I met the CEO of Netflix once at your conference.
Yeah,
and
Reed. Yeah.
I mean, like the only thing I said to him is, you need to put more programs on Netflix. It's quite boring.
Oh, and he did.
And he did.
He's now massively in debt because of you,
yes,
but he did.
Yeah. Exactly. He did. You're right. It was too much.
I think I might take credit for that inspiration.
Okay, but, I will ask him because he's coming, hopefully coming back to Code this year. You can ask him yourself if you're there. Actually, you're not going to be there. I know where you're going to be. So let's get to games. Let's finish up talking with games. And so you're a big game player. here. I see
love
you.
To play video games, yeah.
I know you do. I see the glow, and there's no other lights on. Casey's
yeah, really.
My tenant.
Just like, I'm just in the kitchen cooking, and I'll look over, and like it's just a glow of the screen. Casey just staring at this TV with the concentration I've never seen before. And I love it.
It's great. It's a fun way to blow off steam. Also, like, video games now are great at telling stories, and I love stories. So it's like, it's fun to play.
Yes, definitely.
Okay, so tell me what you're like, and then Louis, tell me.
So the game that I've been playing most recently is just called Spider-Man, and it's exactly what you think. You play Spider-Man,
it's
you swing all around the world. It's amazing.
Why?
I love it so much.
Why do you love it so much?
Well, it sort of gives you the feeling of being Spider-Man because, like, anything in the world you can just sort of swing from. So you just sort of, like, sling your webs, and you fly all over the world, and then you run into bad guys, and you punch them in the mouth, and then you tie them up with
webs. You're a friendly neighborhood Spider-Man.
Friendly neighborhood Spider-Man.
Okay.
So it is not as violent as it sounds.
Okay, so you just swing
Alex
around.
Has it. It's a really good game, and it's just amazing. It's like graphically, it's beautiful.
It's really beautiful.
So what's the story behind it?
The story is that Peter is working with a doctor who turns out to be Dr. Octopus. Spoiler alert.
Okay.
So he's got to take care of that.
Okay, I see. So interesting. Why do you like Louis?
I haven't really played it. I just played it like once or twice, but it's a really beautiful game, and I wish I could play it more, but Alex has the PS4 in his room.
Okay, all right, okay. Which is what, did you ask for that for Christmas?
No, that was him.
What did you ask for?
I am a steady Xbox fan.
Yeah, why is that?
I don't know. I've just been using an Xbox for a while. All my friends have Xboxes.
Mm-hmm. And you talk to each other on them, right?
Yeah, sometimes. I mean, like,
Alex does that all the time.
Yeah,
he's always talking.
I don't really.
Someone.
I like playing single player games more, like Assassin's Creed and the new Red Dead Redemption, which is really good. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like when you play games like Fortnite,
good?
It's just incredible game.
Should I be letting you watch
it? Yeah, it's fine.
Okay.
I mean,
it's a Western.
It's an old Western. Yeah, what's it called? What's the one before?
It's a prequel.
It's a prequel to the original Red Dead, which came out a couple years ago in 2010, I think.
A long time ago.
And it's about just, you know, doing Western stuff, mm-hmm. like robbing trains and, I don't know, Western.
Robbing other people, shooting people.
Exactly. I haven't dived that much into the 60 hours of shit you can do.
It's a huge game.
But yeah, I'm a huge fan of it, and I plan on spending some time this weekend playing it.
All right, excellent. And what's the other one you just mentioned?
Assassin's Creed, which I really like.
That's the guy with the cloak, right?
Yeah, I've just been a huge fan of that since Black Flag came out, which it was just a really good game. And they've just gotten better since. Except
why is that?
For some like dips, like with Unity and Syndicate.
But you know, if you never played these games, they're all historical fictions, and so each one takes place during a different historical time. And as you play the game, and you murder bad people, you also
or
learn
good
about
people.
Like or good people,
depending on how you're feeling.
You learn about the history of ancient Egypt or ancient Greece,
and you can interact with historical figures. Like in this one, I just did a mission with Plato and like all these Greek philosophers and stuff, which I think is really interesting.
Yeah.
This is how teens are learning their history. They're murdering people, but
with
then
Plato.
Also learning about Plato.
Murdering people with Plato.
Murder people with Plato.
Exactly.
I am disturbed and intrigued at the same time.
Maybe sometimes murdering people for
Plato. Yeah, murdering for Plato, yeah.
Okay, all right. Look, and
Plato
give me a Plato
a
quote, please. Anybody?
I can't.
Okay, because he doesn't say anything.
Actually, I can kill him.
As Plato famously said in Assassin's Creed, kill him!
All right, so what is good? What are you looking forward to in the game sector?
In the games
for this Christmas
sector, well, I would say all the big games are out for this year. Red Dead is the one that just came out, and everyone who loves single player games like Louis is playing that one. So that's probably the one that I'm going to do next. I'm also thinking about upgrading my console though, because I have a PlayStation 4, but there is now a PlayStation 4 Pro that has better graphics. And by the way, I just bought a new TV, so that's going to be coming to the house.
Okay.
And it has better capabilities.
You haven't got a couch yet, but I won't. Go
I know
into
we're the, that's we're going to talk. I've got plans.
Couch.
I've got plans.
Yeah,
but it's all happening now. Anyway, that's what I'm looking forward to.
So you're looking forward to. What about you, Louis? You want? What did you want to ask me for from Santa?
Oh, Santa, that old man. I don't know. I think I kind of rediscovered my love for the Wii. I played it at a friend's house recently, and it was just so damn fun.
What were you playing?
I played Wii Sports Resort, the greatest game of all time, and I did the one like little mini game where you have a sword, but it's not really a sword. It's like a foam rod, and you can run around and hit people and make sure they don't hit you. I mean, you can't really run around.
In
like,
life.
It's a control. No, it's just, you just kind of stand there swinging your arms with the Wii remote.
Oh,
in your
right.
Hands.
You used to have that. You had a tennis racket.
I spent hours on that and I was really good and I am still really good.
Right. Okay.
I will take any viewer in a challenge.
In a challenge.
Probably win.
This is
I don't think you can't play against other people, but
Wii Sword?
It's not Wii Sword. It's like Duel or something. I'm not really sure what it's called. Right. Showdown. It's called Showdown.
Okay.
On Wii Sports Resort.
So you want this because you enjoy
I just want to reconnect with like a childhood console that I really enjoyed using.
Yeah.
And I think I forgot about it for a while and you getting caught up in all these new consoles and new games. But, you know, sometimes it's good to go back to the past.
Yeah, we have it at home somewhere.
We should find it.
Love the idea that in these times, even the 16-year-olds want to return to a simpler time. That's how messed up we are as a country right now. Yeah.
Well, I'd like to do Pong again.
Sure, why not?
Pong was not interesting even at the time.
Yeah.
It was like, do you remember Pong?
Of course.
Boop, 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 boop.
Yeah, I played. I've dabbled.
You've dabbled in Pong.
Everyone goes through a Pong
and
phase.
And I liked the one with the Space Invaders.
Oh, Space Invaders was good. What about Pac-Man? Were you a Pac-Man person?
No, it made me nervous. It made me anxious. All video games make me anxious. Yeah. I've tried to play them, and it's like country line dancing with me. I cannot do it.
What about, do you have a game on your phone? Do you play any phone games?
None.
No, she has this app with a bunch of death quotes.
Yeah.
I think that's more of their game for her. Every day it'll pop up. It's like, you're going to die. Deal with it. And she loves it.
I do.
You really do love it so much.
I do. I love that. It's called We Croak.
What's the quote today?
Here's
fitting
five.
Name.
It's called We Croak. It has a little frog. And the whole point is, let me read it from the thing. In Bhutan, they say contemplating death five times a day brings happiness. And it does. I love my We Croak. It's the best thing. And so it's 99 cents, and I've gotten so much out of it. And I put the quotes up on Twitter. Today is Frank Osta. Ostasevsky.
By the time she reads that name, she might be dead.
Our avoidance instinct is also due to the fact that our culture has decided that suffering has no value.
Oh.
Do you like that? That's a good one.
Sure.
Come on. Plato said that.
Yeah,
Here's another one. This is a good one. James Hillman. To feel something thoroughly does not mean it to be... To feel something thoroughly does not mean it to be thoroughly. It is a mistake, a big, bad mistake, to take feelings utterly literally. I think that's a good one.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going to read two more. One that I put up, and I was referring to Trump completely, because he annoyed me about something to say.
Oh, he annoyed me today.
Okay, this is a matter of that. Hold on, where's the
one? Oh, man.
Shush up, you. Hush. Oh, here we go. Boethius. It is because the guy who wrote the philosophy book, whatever, something of confirmation philosophy. It's because you don't know the end and purpose of things that you think the wicked and criminal have power and happiness.
Mm.
I felt better about that. And then lastly, I'm going to read one more, which I thought was just really funny, by Richard Sicken. I don't really blame you for being dead, but you can't have your sweater back. You can't have your sweater back.
Can't have your sweater back.
I know. That was brilliant. I'm thrilled with it. It makes me happy. It's my little game. I don't play any games on my phone.
Yeah.
No, I don't. I don't even play cards. My mom plays solitaire all the time.
She loves that game. She likes Churchill, too.
What's that?
Churchill's a card game that he invented, I think, during the
World War. She plays card games. She plays card games on it and stuff like that. But I don't play. She's always playing those
She's
things.
Always playing
She's always playing.
She's coming in town this weekend.
She
I cannot
is.
Wait to see her.
I know. Yeah. And she uses her phone all the time.
Oh, yeah. She really does.
She really does. She talks to it, though. She goes, Google.
Yeah, she doesn't type. She yells.
She yells at the phone.
And you can always just hear her fingernails.
Yeah, she's got fingers
against the screen. I'm like, Lily, you have to use your finger. She goes, I am.
She
and smashes her fingernail on it.
Yeah, she does. She whacks at it. And she uses it for news. She was the New York Post.
Love her, though.
We love her, but she uses the phone quite a bit. All right, I want to finish up with predictions. I'd like some prediction or something you'd like invented, something that would be really cool, and something you'd like to go away. Casey, you're up.
Well, I will reiterate my prediction from earlier, which is that 2019 it's going to be about the smaller social networks. It's going to be about the group chat. It's going to be about getting away from these big broadcast social networks and into spaces that are more tightly controlled. So that is my big prediction for 2019.
What would you like to go away?
I would like for – there's a thing in Instagram that shows you how many people saw your story, and I hate it.
Snapchat has that.
You'll post your story, and it'll be like 800 people saw your story. And I hate it because it just makes me feel like I'm being creeped on, right? Because most of those people, they don't send messages or anything.
Right.
It's like – so I just wish that would go – I don't need to know how many people saw my story.
Right. All right. Okay. Yeah. Good. That's a good one. Louis?
Could you repeat the question?
What would you like – what's your prediction for something this year in tech? Or?
I think I agree with Casey, but I also think like me returning to my Wii, we will all return to like the simpler times.
The simpler
and
times.
Hopefully all these big companies and stuff with their mega apps will return to like their truer forms and what they
were
at a simpler
That's well
times.
Said. I'm going to get my carrier pigeon back. It's going to be great. We're getting along really well. The cat will eat it, but that's nonetheless. And what do you think has to go away?
Facebook. No, I'm just kidding. I actually don't know.
You don't know?
I can't think of anything right now.
All right. Swisher, that was great. Casey, thank you.
My pleasure. This was fun as always.
You guys are really charming. I have to say, you are a charming pair. And I will see you more.
We're a dynamic duo.
We do, and I'll see you more in my kitchen coming up soon. Anyway, this is what happens at our house all the time. Anyway, thank you all for listening. You can find more episodes of Recode Decode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And please tell a friend about the show. You can follow me on Twitter at Kara Swisher. Louis, do you want my listeners to follow you online? I don't think so. You don't use Twitter.
No, I'm good. Thank you.
Okay, good. Okay, Casey, where can people follow you?
I'm at Casey Newton, and my newsletter's at theverge.com/interface.
And Interface is a wonderful newsletter. I recommend it highly for people. It's a fun read, too, and it's very insightful. Now that you're done with this, go out and check our other podcasts, Recode Media and Pivot. You can find those shows wherever you found this one. Thank you for listening to this episode of Recode Decode, and thanks to our editor, Joel Robbie, and our producer, Eric Johnson. I'll be back here on Monday. Tune in then.